Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, July 15, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Zimbabwe Red Cross is intensifying food assistance to Gwanda District in Matabeleland South Province, which is one of the regions in the country hard hit by perennial dry spells.
As of now, first, what one may see that people at least have something to just keep the body and soul together. It's a heavy to mouth thing because the harvest that was expected to be a bumper harvest did not really materialize.
The South African government says it is still working on modalities of handling permits for thousands of Zimbabweans working in that country.
At this point, I wish to announce that we are in the final stages of deliberations about the Zimbabwean special dispensation, which will expire in December this year. I am mindful of the anxiety among Zimbabwean nationals in possession of this special dispensation issued in 2010, but I shall announce my decision in August this year.
And ZAPU leader Dumiso Dabengwa says Zimbabweans should hold a national indaba to tackle the country's deteriorating economic situation.
The Zimbabwe Red Cross is intensifying food assistance to Gwanda District in Matabeleland South Province, which is one of the regions in the country hard hit by perennial dry spells. The Red Cross first launched an appeal for the district in January, saying an estimated 3,000 children had dropped out of school, some to help their families earn a living and others because their parents can no longer afford school fees. Government has also failed to raise enough money to pay fees for the less privileged under the Basic Education Assistance Module, or BEAM. Most humanitarian groups have been hit by donor fatigue as world economies continue to struggle.
The Zimbabwe Red Cross says it is targeting Gwanda District as there is no other organization responding to the lack of access to food in the region. The Red Cross says the origins of the food shortages include prolonged dry spells, erratic rainfall, and people having limited access to seeds for planting due to the poor performance of the 2012-2013 agricultural season. These factors have all aggravated the situation. When reached for comment, Red Cross spokesman Tekshua Mazurusa said he was busy and did not later respond to phone calls. But former legislator of Gwanda South, Zinti Mkandla, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the crisis has eased a bit as people have harvested, but it's temporary.
As of now, perhaps what one may see is that people at least have something to just keep the body and soul together. It's a heavy to mouth thing because the harvest that was expected to be a bumper harvest did not really materialize. As people would have wanted to. It's slightly better as of now, but one can really see that the hunger is looming on the horizon.
There are also reports that thousands of children are not going to school. Is this what you are seeing on the ground?
Well, I'm not really knowing much about that, but the area that I've been to includes my own rural home, which is in Gwanda North. The situation has not really reached that, though I believe with the passage of time, yes, they may drop out of school because of hunger and other reasons, because poverty is on the increase in Gwanda because of the various reasons that almost everyone knows.
In your own view, what should be done to try and address this food situation in Mad South?
I think everything boils down just to the governance of the whole country. Matabeleland South and Gwanda District in particular is a drought-prone district. I think there was a scheme some years ago which was called Give a Dam Scheme. I believe to try to alleviate the hunger, though not in its totality, would be to revive the irrigation schemes.
Former legislator of Gwanda South, legislator Tande Konzinti Mkandla, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Bulawayo.
The South African government says despite the anxiety of Zimbabweans over work permits, it still has to come up with a final decision on the matter as it is seeking a solution on how best to separate asylum seekers and refugees from economic migrants. Foreign Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba today told an extended public committee on home affairs in Cape Town that a decision will be made in August.
I wish to announce that we are in the final stages of deliberations about the Zimbabwean special dispensation, which will expire in December this year. We have not unilaterally removed existing visa waiver agreements we have with fellow African countries and are keen to enter into more such agreements as we are satisfied that more African countries are conducting civic registration of their nationals. At this point, I wish to announce that we are in the final stages of deliberations about the Zimbabwean special dispensation, which will expire in December this year. I am mindful of the anxiety among Zimbabwean nationals in possession of this special dispensation issued in 2010, but I shall announce my decision in August this year. Future policy development will focus, amongst other issues, on a framework the better to deal with economic migration, many of whom have tended to pose as asylum seekers. We are actively seeking a solution on how best to separate asylum seekers and refugees from economic migrants. In this regard, work is underway to introduce a nationwide discussion on a new international migration policy framework that shall take into consideration current realities and future management perspectives.
That was South African Foreign Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba speaking in Parliament in Cape Town, South Africa.
The issue of Zimbabweans living in South Africa is fast becoming a political pawn in the South African Parliament. Most members of the ruling African National Congress are of the opinion that Zimbabweans should not be given preferential treatment ahead of other foreigners, while the opposition believes that they should be granted the so-called special dispensation permits.
ZAPU leader Dumiso Dabengwa says Zimbabweans should hold a national indaba to tackle the country's deteriorating economic situation. Dabengwa said in an interview with Studio 7, there is need to make a follow-up on a recent economic summit convened by the SAPES Trust in Harare, which called all stakeholders to work together to address the issue. He said ZANU-PF has failed to turn around the economy a year after it was elected into power, following 4 years of growth under a unity government. He speaks to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about the current economic situation.
Our economy is in a bad state, a real bad state. As a country, we are broke, as the Minister of Finance has himself been able to confirm. And we need to get out of this situation. I think about a month ago, Dr. Mandaza, in partnership really with NED, National Endowment for Democracy in the USA, convene an indaba, a conference, whatever you want to call it. And almost all the parties, we discussed a number of things, particularly pertaining to the socioeconomic situation in our country. And we came out with very strong recommendations. The Minister of Finance, Chinamasa, was there himself, and he gave us promise when he talked very positively about what could be done and what government was agreed should be attended to. But when you look at the implementation side of it, nothing. It's very disappointing. It has recommendations.
But the official line from ZANU-PF is that there is no crisis and therefore there is no need to have that indaba that you are talking about. Are there some people in ZANU-PF that you still talk to who are keen on national dialogue?
Well, I'd say the president himself said he was prepared to have a dialogue. So I don't know who in ZANU-PF, when the president has said so, I can't see anybody else oppose that. He has come out to say he is prepared to dialogue with even the opposition about issues that would be able to bring about the turnaround of the economy. So I'm saying that we need to take an opportunity to do that. As I say, logistically, government is not able to sponsor one right now when they can't even be able to pay their workers. ZANU-PF itself it was in the press this last week, is in a crisis with funding, in spite of the fact that they're getting that chunk of money from Parliament. But they have a crisis. They've not been able to pay their workers for over 2 months.
Who can organize such an indaba?
No, this is why I'm saying that these are some of the things we're talking about and trying to find out. Who can be able to assist? Who have got sufficient muscle to be able to call such an indaba? As opposition parties, we're trying to figure out who exactly would be in a position to assist and be able to convene such an indaba.
So plans are already underway?
Yeah, well, we're thinking if somebody else, as I say, if government comes along and says, no, we're going to have it, we're going to convene it, fine. But seeing things are quiet, we're already thinking along those lines and we're trying to see what would be the best organization to do it. As I say, SAPES and NED said they've done their part, helped us to brainstorm and come out what would be the possible solutions to our problems.
That was ZAPO leader Dumiso Dabengwa speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Ten justices nominated by the public to fill three vacant Supreme Court posts appeared before the Judicial Services Commission of Zimbabwe today in Harare for public interviews in compliance with the new constitution. The Judicial Services Commission panel led by Chief Justice Godfrey Chigausiku conducted the interviews at the Rainbow Towers. The candidates are Justices Nicholas Matonzi, Chinembiri Bunu, Charles Ungwe, Appius Zhou, Samuel Kujga, Lavenda Makone, Susan Mavangira, Tendai Uchena, Yuna Makamure, and Mese Moya Machanga. Under the old constitution, appointing judges was the prerogative of the president, working together with the Judicial Services Commission. But the new charter empowers members of the public to first make nomination of candidates before the commission subjects them to an interview process. Advocate Lucas Nkomo tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo the new selection criteria is commendable.
That process is better and more transparent than what used to happen under the old constitution. Under the new process, it becomes possible now for members of the public to nominate a particular judge as a candidate to be considered in the process of interviewing and elevating judges from the High Court or other lower courts to the Supreme Court. What is more commendable with the new process is that since the public nominates the judges who are called as candidates in the interview, it becomes possible for the public to monitor the process of appointing the judges such that if members of the public or any organization feels that the judges or judge who is elevated to the Supreme Court did not deserve such elevation, or the judge who was not elevated to the Supreme Court was unfairly overlooked, that process can be challenged so that the Judicial Service Commission can actually account and give reason to the public as to how it arrived at a decision to elevate particular judges and not to elevate others. Members of the public can utilize the Administrative Justice Act, which gives members of the public the right to be given reasons for any administrative decision that is taken by organs of state, that is the Judicial Services Commission. So compared to what used to happen under the old constitution, that is a commendable improvement, and it puts us in a similar position like what happens in South Africa, where the appointment of judges, the interview process, is actually broadcast live on television so that the whole nation can actually see what goes on there.
That was Advocate Lucas Nkomo in Bulawayo speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo.
Seven Live Talk is launching a women's roundtable starting Wednesday, July 15, 2014. The show will address issues of concern to us women. Tell us what you want to hear via email at studio7@voanews.com. Again, studio7@voanews.com or WhatsApp 1-202-465-0318. Again, 1 202-465-0318. And of course, on our Facebook page, Studio 7.
Coming up,
a United States company launches HIV infant detection test showing results in 1 hour. Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Human Rights Watch says Boko Haram militants have killed more than 2,000 civilians in Nigeria this year, most of them in the northern state of Borno. It says the militants carried out nearly 100 attacks during the first 6 months of the year, including bomb blasts that targeted marketplaces, a brothel, a technical college, and two public viewings of soccer matches.
Afghan officials say a suicide car bomb has killed more than 40 people in eastern Afghanistan. Earlier reports said 89 were killed. Tuesday's attack took place in a region that borders Pakistan.
A French soldier has been killed in a suicide attack in northern Mali as the French government moves to set up a new counter-jihadist force in the region. The French government announced the soldier's death on Tuesday, a day before Defense Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian is due to visit Mali to sign a new defense pact with the government.
And Israel says it has resumed airstrikes against Hamas militants in the Gaza Strip hours after agreeing to an Egyptian ceasefire proposal. The Israeli military said Tuesday troops held fire for 6 hours but retaliated after Gaza militants fired about 50 rockets over Israel from Hamas-controlled territory. It says its Iron Dome missile defense system intercepted the rockets above three Israeli cities.
A United States-based company, Allier, recently developed and tested a gadget able to detect HIV in infants in 1 hour. A test known as Allier Q, which was conducted in Mozambique, is now set to be rolled out in 15 other African countries, including Zimbabwe. Studio 7 reporter Tatenda Gumbo has more.
The study, conducted in 5 clinics in Maputo, Mozambique, with the prototype AlertQ, has shown the ability to detect HIV in infants as young as 1 month old in order to allow the immediate start of antiretroviral therapy. The study, which focused on point of care, training nurses in local clinics to administer the test, allows for non-laboratory personnel and improved screening and treatment. Tom Lindsay, Allure President of Commercial Operations in Africa, says the company developed the technology to administer the nucleic acid test at clinic level, which otherwise is complicated when using standard HIV testing.
The standard diagnostic technologies essentially are not reliable because you're not sure if you're picking up maternal antibody or picking up antibody in the child. So molecular technologies which actually identify the viral nucleic acid are needed.
Of the 827 samples tested on both the AlertQ and laboratory platform, 825 results were consistent. The majority of infants ranged from ages 1 to 2 months. Lindsay says the process of testing the infants was simple and yielded results within an hour.
We used nursing sisters, and they were in fact in a number of clinics in Maputo and Mozambique. So they would collect blood from the infants from what we call a heel prick or a heel stick. So they would do a small heel prick on the child. They would collect blood in a capillary. It's a very small quantity of blood. We need only 25 microliters, which essentially is one drop of blood. That drop of blood is then applied to a diagnostic cartridge called the Allier Detect, and then the cartridge essentially is inserted into the AlertQ analyzer, and then that is processed, giving a result within 60 minutes.
He adds that the immediate testing reduced the issue of lost time to follow up, where results failed to get back to the patient or to the mother of child after being lost in clinical systems.
By using these point-of-care technologies, we can deploy these now at the actual clinical site. Our clinicians are seeing mothers and infants and can then use those technologies to diagnose the infants while they're there with their mothers.
Allure points out that according to UNAIDS, 90% of HIV-infected children currently live in sub-Saharan Africa, and an estimated 90% of infections in children are acquired through mother-to-child transmission, or MTCT. Zimbabwe, like many other countries, has been working to curb MTCT, and in 2013 launched a program, Families and Communities for Elimination of Pediatric HIV in Zimbabwe, or FACE. The effort by the Ministry of Health and a consortium of non-governmental health organizations and a grant of $60 million from the United States government is designed to reduce the rate of MTCT from 14% to less than 5% by 2015. Lindsay says in cases where mother-to-child transmission still occurs, AlerQ technologies can improve the outcome of infant patients.
We see that can also provide similar value to the healthcare system in Zimbabwe, and we hope that by deployment and introduction of this technology, we can improve, as I say, patient outcomes, patient care, for detection of these HIV positive infants.
The AlerQ is currently pending World Health Organization approval, but Lindsay says the company is hoping to expand from infant testing to other forms of detection for not only HIV but other illnesses found throughout Africa.
We will also use the molecular platform in future for TB diagnosis and for diagnosis of other infections such as hepatitis C. So we're very excited by the technology. It's a molecular platform. It has many applications.
AlerQ is set to start operating in Zimbabwe, South Africa, Malawi, Zambia, and 11 other African countries in the next 6 months. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Tatenda Gumbo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Public Service Minister Nicholas Goche, representing the government, is Thursday expected to meet with representatives of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions and Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe as the tripartite negotiating forum to discuss the harmonization of labor laws and the tripartite negotiating forum bill. ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo says the tripartite negotiating forum bill is very important to the workers because it makes anything that comes out of the TNF binding to the three parties.
We have been involved in the labor law reform for some time, and lower structures have discussed this labor law and the issues we have agreed, the issues we seem to have differences. And on this day, it will be put to the principals for them to also contribute and see how best we will be able to finalize our labor law. And also taking into consideration that we now have the new constitution, we have been discussing about how best can we have the TNF legislated and become a legal entity. So that's the nature of Thursday's meeting.
How are workers going to benefit from the tripartite negotiating forum bill?
In our view, over the years, we have been having the TNF, but what was coming out from the TNF was not binding because the TNF was not a legal entity. So in our view, that is going to be made a legal body. What it means is whatever comes out from these discussions will be binding to the three parties. In our view, it's a positive development. We have seen over the years where government opt out from what has been agreed.
That was Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions Secretary General Japhet Moyo in Harare. What will be agreed at the Thursday meeting will be taken to cabinet for deliberation. Studio 7 tried to get a comment from MCOS Director Johnny Mufukare, but he referred us to Permanent Secretary Ngwane Masoka, who was not responding to calls to his mobile phone.
In sports news, the Zimbabwe under-18 rugby team is in South Africa at the Coca-Cola Craven Week, where the team hopes to perform well despite not having adequate preparations due to sponsorship challenges. Rugby Zimbabwe General Manager Sifiso Made says the team will be in South Africa for a week and will play South African provincial district teams before taking on Namibia.
We do play again tomorrow versus the Greek Quads Country District, which will be an early morning game from our end. Should do well against them, having looked at the team that had gone through, I think, few combinations would have to be changed. So from technical perspective, the coaches would have picked up on the two things that they would obviously like to add to tomorrow's game. Our last game will be on the 18th against Namibia, and that is our nemesis, because each year we go down, it's Namibia that we try and beat. You know, in the main stages in Madagascar, we lost to Namibia. So it's always a telling fate when we can start to beat Namibia and show that our rugby has grown a great deal.
And how important is such a fixture like Craven Week for the growth of rugby in Zimbabwe?
It is a huge step for us, because in the southern region or in Africa, you know that after South Africa, we were competing vis-a-vis Zimbabwe, Namibia, Kenya, Uganda. So for us, 7 weeks makes it two things really, that these lads get a chance to be scouted by provincial sides who would then offer them bursaries or scholarships for at university level, allow them to play at the highest level, allow them the maximum exposure there is on this side of the equator. So for our lads, this is really a question of them knowing that, listen, if we do make it into this squad, we are really amongst the best in the world. And as you know, we try and encourage to get a team that will represent us at under-19, where obviously we play against other nations, and then there is a trophy, a World Cup trophy, just like the senior men's team.
That was Zimbabwe Rugby General Manager Sifiso Made speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye from Harare.
In our mailbag today, Robson writes, "Thanks guys for the news. Keep up the good work. I love the way Sandy reads the news."
And Dixon Mrewa in Zimbabwe says, "Thanks for your informative programs. Keep it up."
Another listener who did not identify himself or herself wrote, "I wish if Studio 7 would broadcast 24/7 or 365 days.
And thanks very much to all those who wrote to us.
If you wish to express your views on Studio 7, please send us a message on our hotline. Leave a message of your choice. The number is +1 202 205 9942. Dial 11 when the phone is answered to leave us your voice message, which we can play on air. The number once again, +1 202 205 9942, and then dial 11 to leave your message. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about reports indicating that some students are dropping out of school to support their struggling parents. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The Zimbabwe Red Cross is intensifying food assistance to Gwanda District in Matabeleland South Province, which is one of the regions in the country hard hit by perennial dry spells.
The South African government says it is still working on modalities of handling permits for thousands of Zimbabweans working in that country.
And ZAPU leader Dumiso Dawengwa says Zimbabweans should hold a national indaba to tackle the country's deteriorating economic situation.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Join us at 7 at every evening for news in three languages, and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. You can send us an email to studio7@voanews.com. Or text us at the following number, 001 202